Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Sport of Kings podcast. On this pod, we will cover the late pick five from Santa Anita on Saturday, December 26th. This is show number 100, December 24th, 2020. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Sport of Kings, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, have you finished your Christmas shopping?
Yes, I have. I have a pretty simple method of shopping. I give everyone money for Christmas. So that's my lazy way of shopping. I've never had anybody complain, though. So,
you know, my son, who's the one person who I still haven't shopped for, so I got to find something. He used to just ask me for money. Like, hey, what do you want for Christmas? Or what do you want for your birthday? He'd say, just give me money. And I'm like, no, it's too weird. So I'm trying to find him a gift certificate to a restaurant. But the complication is he lives in L.A. and there's no in-restaurant dining.
Yeah, there's no in-restaurant dining where I live either right now. So I can relate.
Unless you're a politician, then you have special entree.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Then you can have anything you want. Yeah.
I think I'm still going to find give the gift certificate to him and hope that they open up the restaurants and that the pandemic subsides in the next couple of months.
Yes. Let's hope we can put 2020 behind us soon, along with COVID and all COVID related nonsense.
Now, I also have a gift for our listeners, and it's interesting because it relates to our guest today. Guess what that gift is? Well, let me ask you, how do you watch replays when they're not in the daily racing form? If they're Churchill Downs owned tracks, what do you do?
I go to an ADW and look at the replays there. They typically have them.
Yeah, I do too. And unfortunately, it's kind of tedious. It takes a while depending on which ADW you're using, it takes a while to find the horses. And sometimes it's just difficult. So I finally found the best way, and that is using tbg.com. So you have to open an account. And I happened to open an account a while ago, and I wasn't really using it that much. But then somebody said, hey, if you want to see replays for the Breeders' Cup of the foreign races, go to TBG. So I went there, and like every replay was there. I didn't have to search YouTube. It was really great. Now, they don't always have the foreign races, but they do often have, at least Breeders' Cup, they had them. And the best thing about it is that you can look up by horse. So instead of like choosing it from a calendar and like having to look in your racing form and see like what date it is, you can go to the handicapping button at the top, choose race replays, and then click on search by horse and then type in the name of the horse that you want. And it's going to show all those horses' races, and you can just watch as many of those replays as you want.
Sounds good. I have never tried that. I just might do that. Yeah. I want to share a gift actually it's a gift that I enjoy every year. It's not a Christmas gift. It's a day after Christmas gift. And that is opening day at Santa Anita. I always look forward to it. I'm looking forward to it this year, and I'm looking forward to talking about the late pick five on opening day at Santa Anita right now.
So am I, and we have a special guest that's going to help us do that. He's a former analyst for TVG. He has a podcast called That's What G Said, where he has guest handicap along with him, kind of like us. Last week, his guests were Craig Milkowski and Emily Gullickson. He's Gino Bucola. Gino, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Scott, Chris, thanks for having me. Listen to your guys' show all the time. Really good stuff. Great handicap. And I've had Chris on before. Did a lot of work with Chris when I was doing some stuff for Elite Racing. So always love talking racing, and hopefully we can steer some people to a few winners.
Now, Gino, it seems like I don't know how you would have time to listen to our pod, because it seems like you're always doing pods, long pods, with all about sports and TV and handicapping. How do you have time? Like, how do you manage to fit it all in?
Sleep is overrated for me. You know, I'm very, I need very little sleep, little periods of time, just a couple hours here and there. And then I'm good to go for another shift. And so I love consuming content, and that's why I like to put content out, because I like to talk about a lot of the stuff out there. There were some really good horse racing podcasts and all sorts of shows. And so what I try to do on my show is give you a little bit of everything. And what it does is it brings people kind of from all over the place. Like right now, one of the big things a lot of people are into are the Mandalorian show. So I've been having really good guests come on. We recap that TV show, going through every NFL game every week. Had a guest on this week where we previewed all the Christmas Day basketball games for the NBA. So a little bit of everything, because I grew up playing all these sports. Before I got it into TVG, I did some play-by-play and commentary for basically everything out there. And so I just like to share a lot of the stuff that I've experienced. Any knowledge that I have, I'll try to help people out there. And I've been lucky to have some really good sponsors that just say, hey, Gino, if people are listening and they're clicking, we don't care what you're talking about. Have fun, you know? So it's worked out really well.
All right. Now, as far as handicapping, what do you use? Are you a racing form guy?
Yeah. Or DRF formulator for me, for the most part. And just like you were talking about too, I'm a big replay guy. I have to have watched at least a replay or two for a horse, for me personally, to get a good feel for this horse. And that's where I feel like I can find a lot of things that aren't in the comment lines, that aren't in the running lines, maybe things that happened somewhere in a race or something that I'm projecting to happen that for the reason that it didn't happen in the most previous race. So yeah, that's my bread and butter there.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about your replay work, because I did some replay work for this week and look forward to comparing notes. Chris, did you have any questions for Gino?
Well, like you said, I do think Gino might log more podcast hours a week than anybody else out there, at least anybody that I know of. And he says he doesn't sleep. I think that means he lives on like cappuccino and Red Bull or something.
You know, to make to just, I've actually never had a cup of coffee in my entire life. I have very little caffeine. It's like very natural energy. If I had a Red Bull, which I've had once or twice, I wouldn't sleep for like 3 days. So I'm sort of lucky. That's why I do this, because it's a way for me to capitalize on all that energy. It's like, hey, it's better to have other people hear me talking than just my girlfriend having to hear me talk all day long. So it serves a double purpose.
Well, I do have one question maybe. You have guests on your podcast that talk about racing. That's not the only thing you talk about, but you do cover races on a weekly basis.
Oh yeah. Every episode has, like, I understand that a lot of people following me for a lot of racing stuff. So every episode is going to have, even if it's early in the week, we'll talk about some of the midweek tracks come start of the new year. I'm going to be covering like all the Sam Houston, every day at Sam Houston, which is awesome, because it's one of those really low takeouts in all of the rolling exotics, not just like a low pick five. You can play low takeout, pick threes, pick fours all throughout the card, which is really, really cool. So I'm going to really pump their track a lot and cover a lot for them on social media, and a lot on the podcast too, segments for them. And then whatever the big races for every weekend are, this weekend I'll talk some Santa Anita, a little Gulfstream there. If it's something in New York, Kentucky, wherever the big focus is, I'll dive in that weekend and have a guest or two.
So my question to you about your guests is, was there any guest you had that shared some handicapping nugget that you've kind of tucked away and used since they came on the show? And if so, would you share that with the listeners?
You know, one that is funny that Craig actually just mentioned last week when we were talking about Remington Park, doesn't have anything really to do with Remington Park in particular. It's just when you're looking at the past performances, and it sounds really simple and basic, make sure you start from the bottom and not from the most recent race. A lot of people will start immediately at the most recent race, look at that one, and so they'll see what a horse has done a little bit. But if you start at the beginning of their career, you really get a good idea of like a horse's trajectory, where they've gone, have they changed barns, what did they try to do, were they good at this, did this work, did this not work. You get a better pattern, a better career arc of just a story of each individual horse. And I think sometimes it's just a simple thing like that, that was one that, you know, just jumped out to me last week, and we had a conversation with that, because that was something that I think even one of my former colleagues at TVG, Joaquin Jaime, used to say. And then also something silly too is just, you know, I think you guys both mentioned this a lot too. Make sure you take a lot of time to put your wagers together. You know, I spend so much time handicapping. Sometimes it's easy. You do all your handicapping and then you spend like 2 minutes, you put a ticket together. You're like, okay, I'm good. Take time. If you're spending a while handicapping, make sure you're spending a lot of time formulating your tickets, right? Put a few together. If you're using some sort of a ticket maker, great. If you're just doing it on yourself and you're mapping out 3 or 4 different tickets, a big one, a small one. I'm the type of person who's always playing like 2 to 3 different tickets. I'll usually single maybe a different horse on each one and then play one small one where maybe I don't single anything, but just kind of shorten up all the way down. So yeah, whatever your approach is, just make sure you take the time to actually don't get to the window or don't have it be like a minute to post before you're like, oh, I don't even have my ticket mapped out. That's just, there's some basic things that is you want to be as prepared as possible. Like don't make yourself stressed out, because this is a stressful enough game as it is.
Those sound like good words of advice, and maybe we can apply some of that as we talk about these races at Santa Anita.
All right, we're doing the late pick 5 at Santa Anita. It's a blockbuster sequence. It starts with the 7th race. It's the San Antonio, which is a grade 2, 1/16 on dirt for 3-year-olds and up, purse of 200,000. Gino, where did you land in our first race?
Just a heads up to people that maybe don't play Southern California normally. I love Southern California, grew up here. This is what the races I have played my whole life. It's been bad the last few years. Short fields, even on the big days, not great. This is one of the better Santa Anita cards I can remember. This is an excellent card. So if you're hearing us talk Santa Anita, like, really look at the past performances and take a look. I promise you, you will find some opportunities. I go right to a lightly raced horse in here that I was pretty impressed with in the last couple of victories. And that's Idol. I'm looking at who's going to come into this race, because I think the horse to beat is Mucho Gusto, and everybody else is kind of a horse I've seen. I sort of know what I'm going to get with. I think there's a lot of upside with Idol in here. If you went back and watched his last two races, they were visually extremely impressive. The September race, he was mid-pack about 5 lengths off, about 3 deep, and he just was with a nice sustained rally, just drew off. It was very impressive late. And then he settled behind horses inside. It was a small field in his start in November, and he was always within a couple lengths. He took a nice step forward, stretching out, you know, from 7 furlongs, going much longer. Doesn't feel like distance should be any problem with this guy. What I like about him too is he has come over here to Santa Anita, and he's been working here for a while. He actually came to Del Mar in Southern California, so he's not just shipping straight in from Churchill Downs. He's been here for a while. He's got a lot of foundation over this racetrack. So I think he's ready for a big one here. I'm using Idol on all of my exotics.
Okay, Idol, the 3-year-old, one of 2 3-year-olds in the field, an up-and-comer. And the question is, what will his price be? Chris, where did you land?
Well, I think Idol does have upside. I don't idolize him quite as much as Gino, but I do think you don't know what the ceiling is on that horse yet. And certainly I think he's a contender in here. That 5-1 doesn't get my juices flowing really, but you never know if that morning line will hold up. So I wouldn't talk anybody out of that horse. I agree. Mucho Gusto is by far the one to beat. He's really a good horse. I mean, if you look at his past performances at anything 1/16 or less, he's almost lights out. He's won every start at 1/16 or less, except once he ran 2nd to Improbable at Los Alamitos, which is, you know, no disgrace. He's 3-for-3 at Santa Anita. Now, at 9 furlongs or longer, he doesn't win. But he's, you know, even in those races, he doesn't disgrace himself. You know, he runs good races to horses like Maximum Security and Improbable and horses like that. So And he might not be 100% for this race, but the objective is the Saudi Cup, and this is his prep. And, you know, he prepped for it last year in the Pegasus and ran a really big race. So I think he's going to be tough to beat. I wouldn't be against singling him in the pick five. If you're going to try to beat him, maybe you try to beat him with Idol. The other three-year-old in this race, though, to me is a little more interesting because it'll be a much bigger price, and that's the two-horse Kiss Today Goodbye. This horse, actually, if you look at his dirt races, he had one race where something went wrong and he got eased. But, I mean, other than that, his dirt races are all really good. I mean, the one that jumps out off the page is when he was beaten just a little over a length by Honor AP and Thousand Words in the stakes race there at Del Mar, the Shared Belief, which was sort of a derby prep because of the weird schedule due to COVID. You know, that is a really nice race. And then they put him back on the turf a couple times again, which I don't understand. That's where he started his career too. And he's never hit the board on the turf, but then they finally got him back on the dirt and he looked really good again back on the dirt in his last start. And now they keep him on the dirt for this. I think a repeat of his last race could get him second place in here. I don't know if he can beat Mucho Gusto, but, and I think maybe he can beat the rest. So at probably the longest price on the board, he kind of interests me. The two horse Kiss Today Goodbye.
Well, I will say that Kiss Today Goodbye, my trip note said ridiculously wide, galloped out huge. Jock had to pull him up. He was so eager to keep going. The only thing is, it looked like one of these blockbuster efforts that is going to set the horse back some. That's just my impression of him. But I guess I will sort of go into the horses that I like. But I'm going to caveat it with, I thought this was the toughest race. And I wasn't sure where to go because, yes, Mucho Gusto is prepping. He's not working gangbusters like he did before. Like he looks like they'd be fine not, you know, not winning this race. But if he runs back to his best numbers, he's going to win the race, and then he still has plenty of time, like 6 weeks into the Saudi Cup, or maybe it's 6 to 8 weeks. I'm not sure when exactly that is. And they clearly want to win that race. And this race it's not as important. So I was inclined to try to beat Mucho Gusto. And I actually lukewarmly landed on the same horse as Gino with Idol. I agree with your assessment, Gino, of those trips. And he looked like he was game inside those horses. He seemed like a big horse. I haven't learned to trust my eyes well enough, but he looked like a big horse. And the trainer thinks that he is more of a distance horse. That was a 1 3/16 race. His first two turn race, he sets a track record at Churchill Downs. I mean, this horse has got some talent. Now, the only thing is, I think he might be lower than 5 to 1 because of that. He was bet to favoritism, odds on just about in all three of his races. So just a few things that I noted in his maiden win, which was, I agree with Gino, impressive. The horse he beat that day, The Sound, came back to win his next race. And then in another race after that, posted a 104 buyer. And that's a Brad Cox trainee. So it just looks like he's spanked some good horses. And I going 1 3/16 as your first two turn race and setting a track record. I looked at all the other races that day at Churchill and nobody was even close to a track record. It wasn't like Breeders' Cup Day when like five horses set track records. So that's the horse that I landed on, but I wouldn't just use him. Even though he's much slower, I'm interested in Extra Hope because he was fast as a two-year-old. He was always pretty fast. But he's putting it together now. He's really like moving forward, and he's put it into another gear with two wins in a row. He should just be able to sit right off, take the 101, and could be hard to gun down. So I would definitely be using those two horses. And I'm not sure. I haven't decided on all my plays in this race, but certainly those two.
Gino, anything you want to jump in and add?
Yeah, I thought Extra Hope, and you even mentioned Take the 101 if you're looking for an under type, because you know what Take the 101 is going to go, and I can't imagine the JMS horses who the Take the 101 and Extra Hope, both the same owner, I can't imagine them dueling each other. So Extra Hope just makes the most sense to let Take the 101 go and sit. And Scott, if he gets that kind of a trip that you said, I agree. I think Extra Hope, he just keeps kind of stepping forward. He should end up sitting a really nice trip. And he's another horse where, you know, he's really cool when you start with his debut and you go through his whole career. He took four starts to break his maiden. And once he stretched out to a mile in the 16th, he's basically improved in every start since his debut. He tossed a turf tries, and August 26th was a race off a 9-month layoff. He just keeps stepping forward. He can press a little bit. He can. The question I have is, how far back can he be? If he's like three or four lengths back, he'll have to show us that he can do that. But I think he can. He keeps stepping forward, and he might be just falling into a perfect trip here.
Yeah, I want to jump in. Just one thing I have to say about the track record for Idle. That was a mile and 3/16. I don't think they run that distance very often. In fact,
they've only run it like three times.
Yeah, so I mean, this thing about the track record, it's meaningless, you know. I mean, that's why you have speed figures. So please don't put too much stock in that track record. Not that he's not a good horse, just that's not because he set a track record going two turns. That was just the distance is why it was a track record. That's all.
Any love for Sharp Samurai from anyone?
Well, I think she's solid. And the thing I want to note about, you know, Extra Hope, his running style, that's exactly the trip the Sharp Samurai wants. It's exactly the trip Midcourt wants. It's exactly the trip Mucho Gusto wants. So I just don't see Extra Hope beating those three horses, all of those horses with the same trip. I mean, they're all going to want to be stalking Take the 101, and they're all going to be wanting to pounce at about the same time. And I just don't see him out finishing like certainly Mucho Gusto, but even Sharp Samurai or Midcourt or even Idle won't be, he'll be a little farther back probably, but so I don't think he's going to get the great trip that I just think he's going to get the trip everybody else wants. Take the 101 might be the interesting one, because maybe they all let him go and he doesn't stop.
He's certainly
going to be out there winging it on the front end.
Much better at a mile and a 16th than a mile and an eighth, where he tried against the really good horses two back. There's no improbable or maximum security in this race. Mucho Gusto's good, but I don't think he's proven to be quite as good as either one of those quite yet. And I have a lot of respect for Mucho Gusto too, but I think I may feel a little more like Scott that maybe he's just a little short here. And if he is, this is probably the time to get him. There's a lot of these other horses that feel like we've seen them, and I'm sort of bored with them. That's why I like Idle as sort of the new face.
Yeah, he is. He's the fresh face. You know, Mucho Gusto, I just think I have a higher opinion of him than you guys do. I think he could have been an elite horse last year. They just didn't run him. And, you know, even when he got beat by Maximum Security at Monmouth that day, he had a horrible trip. He got left at the gate. He was hung wide, and he still loomed up on Maximum Security and made him really work hard. And that was the Maximum Security that was SGF on, not the one that, you know, we saw here at the end of this year. And, you know, so Mucho Gusto, like I said, he's at a mile, less than a mile and eighth. This horse was as good as any three-year-old last year. It was as good as any three-year-old in his three-year-old year. And he just didn't get a chance to run as a four-year-old because a Saudi prince bought him and he wants him to win the Saudi Cup, which may be a stretch because it's at a mile and eighth. And he actually ran well last year in the Saudi Cup. You could see him get wobbly. And after the last 16th, he was ahead until then. And then he just kind of started getting all over the track. And I think it was Irad was riding him that day and trying to do a little race riding on Maximum Security. But anyway, I think Mucho Gusto is a really, really good horse. He's a couple notches above this field. And I think even his B game, he can dominate. So I think that's where I differ from the two of you. If I play the pick five, I'll probably just single him. And if he gets beat, then we move on. I'm not going to get a lot of value in that, but I think there's enough question marks with the layoff that he's not going to be 3-5 or something in here. Even though I think he probably is that good. So And that's kind of the difference. And of the rest of them, you know, I kind of think Kiss Today Goodbye is an interesting, you know, long shot at a big price, or maybe take the 101. You know, I think the rest of them are all have a lot to prove, and I'm willing to take a shot underneath with some long shots. I just want to ask Scott, though, on Mucho Gusto, I was a little surprised on his comment about the workouts. I mean, 59 flat, that's not a great workout. 59 flat.
There's a lot of horses that run those kind of workouts. I mean, this is a grade two field, so they run that fast. It's just a question of how they are running proportionally to how they've worked out in the past. You know, it's not as fast as he usually works.
Well, last year before the Pegasus, he worked 59 and 4, and he ran lights out in the Pegasus. So how is 59 flat not a good workout for him coming into this race?
It's a little different because it wasn't as long of a layoff. And the other thing is, I don't have all the works right in front of me. So just, you know, he may have had a different workout that was like 58. I don't know. I'm just saying that just overall in general, the workouts are a little slower than he usually runs.
I don't see that. A 59 flat's the fastest he's ever worked at Santa Anita. So I don't know how that's slower than he usually works. Well, I'm missing something there.
Now I gotta look it up and correct you.
Yeah. Tell me if you can find a workout at Santa Anita that was faster than 59 flat, or any even close to 59 flat. I think the fastest workout part of that at Santa Anita was 59 and 3, and last year he worked 59 and 4, three works prior to his Pegasus. So I think the workouts are really sharp. I don't have any workout reports, but I'm guessing that they'll be pretty good. I don't think that's a problem. I think he's ready to roll. He's probably not 100% crank, but they'll have 2 months to get to recover, and so he's not gonna go easy on him in this race, I don't think.
Okay, well, he does show a 57.4 work, but that was at Los Alamitos. I don't distinguish like that was his fastest ever at the track, even though that, you know, was. But, you know, and look, you have to take these things with a grain of salt anyway, because the track could be playing slower. In general, it could be a full second slower than it was a year ago. So you know, like, I'm not taking a stand here against Mucho Gusto. And that's why I'm not even sure I'm playing the pick five, because there's enough decent chalk in the sequence that it's hard to beat at all. But I will say, because Gino mentioned it, I feel like you kind of have to use Sharp Samurai. I mean, he in that Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, nobody was going to catch Nixco. He ended up finishing second. He checked hard into the first turn. I'm like, it like he had some major issue there, lost some serious momentum. So, you know, it was an impressive race, and it was his best race. It's possible that he'll react to it as an older 6-year-old, you know, end of the year 6-year-old. But like, maybe he'll be more of a price, you know, than 5-2. So, a part of it will depend on how they bet this thing.
Yeah, I just tend to be negative on horses at this time of year that ran in the Breeders' Cup, especially if they ran pretty well. That's usually the target, and they're over the top. And to me, Sharp Samurai kind of fits that mold. And the horses that have come out of that Breeders' Cup mile haven't really done much. Jesus's team won, but he was all out to win a race in the Claiming Crown. And, you know, like Owendale ran so-so out of that race. I can't remember who else has run since then. So I'm just typically I'm trying to beat those horses coming out of the Breeders' Cup that run back in later in the same year.
All right. So here's what I'm going to do, just to show you that I respect your opinion. I'm going to toss Sharp Samurai.
Put him in the winner.
There we go. He's a winner. But no, it's a good point, right? I mean, you're right. And it hasn't been that long of a year for him, but that was like the fastest race of his life. So, you know, Mucho Gusto, he's fresh. You know, he's at the end of his 4-year-old year. If he's any faster than he was at the beginning of the year, then he could crush this field.
Yeah, I mean, his A game is much better than everybody else's. And I do agree with Chris in that his B game probably still could win this. That's why the only horse that I really leaned towards was Idol, because I felt like he has the most upside to where he might just be really, really good. And if that's the case, then maybe he's still a horse that's, you know, able to beat Mucho Gusto anyways, if Mucho Gusto shows up with a good effort. Everybody else, I think, would really sort of have to show up with a lesser than performance for him, because I feel like I've seen the best of most of these.
I think that's a good way to sum it up. Yeah, I agree. And Idol might be the one horse that you don't know the ceiling on, right? Mm-hmm. The others, yeah, they could improve a little bit, but they're not going to jump way up in here. But, you know, Idol's the one horse you don't know how good he is. But again, 5-1. If he was 8 or 10-1, I'd be a lot.
That's
more
probably 7-2. Like Scott, I think Scott even said that too. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he's 7-2, because a lot of other people are looking and going, oh yeah, he's really one of the more, the only other really exciting horse to play in here.
Yeah, I can see Idol being played. Well, so anyway, that's a great race to start the sequence.
a little Freudian slip there.
Let's move on to the eighth race. It's the La Brea Stakes, Grade 1, 7 furlongs on dirt for 3-year-old fillies, 300K on the line. I also thought this was a pretty tough race. Chris, where did you land?
Yeah, to me, this is a really fun race to handicap. I mean, there's a lot going on here. Does seem like there's a lot of speed signed on in a 7-furlong race. And those who have listened to the pod regularly know I like these kinds of races. I like to try to find a horse that will come from out of it. And it's even better in here, because there's a horse I touted on the pod last time she ran. And she kind of got stumbled out of the gate and pretty much lost all chance right at the start. And although I wouldn't say she lost all chance at the start, but it compromised her. And then she had to almost stop dead in her tracks heading into the first turn, and that completely compromised her chances. And that's the 9-horse Fair Maiden. This is the kind of horse I like to play in 7-furlong races, because I think she's the best closer in the race. But also, it's the kind of horse I like to play in general, because she flashed a lot of talent early on as a 2-year-old. That tells me she has a lot of natural speed and ability. And then they tried to stretch her out on the turf. She won on poly and on turf really impressively. They tried her, you know, going a route distance, and that was not her game. She's by street boss, so she's kind of bred to be a sprinter. They brought her back on the dirt sprinting, so she showed she could handle synth, turf, and dirt now. And I was all over her in that next start where she had the trouble, but I think she's sitting on a really big race here. You can excuse her last. She's shown she can run on dirt. She's shown she can finish. And, you know, in this race, she could get completely overlooked with all these Baffert runners and some other really nice horses. So she's far from a lock, but I think she'll be really good value in here. So I'm all about the 9 Fair Maiden.
Fair Maiden, an absolute nightmare trip in her last at Keeneland. Gino, where did you land?
I have a Fair Maiden in the second spot. I like her quite a bit. She'll be on most of all my tickets, I'd imagine. I'm going to land. Well, and you kind of hit on something that makes this race a little difficult, Chris, is like you've got 4 Baffert horses in here, and just trying to predict what tactics those horses are going to choose, because if any combination of them showed speed, it really wouldn't be that shocking. I mean, you look at all of them, like Marinith, Emiko, Provocation, like they've all got speed. You know, Golden Principle, it wouldn't be a shock. They could all be sitting, any one of them could be taken off a little bit. That's what throws such a wrench into this race. Like, what trips are those horses going to try to get? He really controls the race and through Baffert, and how are they going to, you know, set themselves up? You got, as we said, you got a brown horse, and you got 11 fillies, you know, field of 11 with a 7-2 morning line favorite, and 10 of them are 12-1 or lower. This race is awesome. I'm going to land on the 3, I think. The half-sister to Bodemeister, who was a grade 1 winner, multiple grade 1 placed. We all know Bodemeister for her success on the Triple Crown Trail. I just like the way she has really...
Just for people who are driving, because that's the way I listen to pods. That's sure. Himiko. The three Himiko. Is Himiko.
Number three in here, Himiko. And she, her last two races are the ones that were really, really impressive when she took the blinkers off on October the 18th. She was just pressing off. You know, she was right off the 3-5 favorite that day, and she was never more than a length behind, and she beat a next out maiden special weight winner. In her second start, she was asked for a little more speed inside. Two others were to the outside pressing, so she wasn't even on in the best spot down on the inside where you're a little behind. She moved up on even terms with them, just put them away, always traveling really well, and she beat, you know, her one of her stable mates who's in this race too, Provocation. I think she's really improving and stepping forward. I'm just a little bit worried about the trip. Can she be a little farther back than she's been in her last few? This is a total spread out type of race for me. I think you need, you know, three or four. I'll probably take that approach.
Okay. Himiko, one of the Baffords. I'm actually going to go with a different horse that had a bad race at Keeneland. And although I have Fair Maiden as my second choice as well. So we all like Fair Maiden. Secret Keeper that's the four horse. She ran a big race three back. It was at 6.5 furlongs, and she had a very nice stride at the end. In her next race, she went two turns for the first time. And as often happens with horses, she reacted. And the horse that won went on to win another stake after that. That was Harvest Moon. Then they took her to Keeneland, and I didn't like her in that race because I've noticed that trainers like Baffert and Sadler, they have it down. They ship so often that they have the whole procedure down, and they know how to keep the horses calm and, you know, not ruffled. But trainers that don't ship out of California, and this could be the same as true for trainers like on the Atlantic coast, when they don't ship very often, like, and I'm talking like once every 5 years, I don't even know how they do it, right? But they don't seem to, they often, the horses just, they don't react very well. And Secret Keeper did stumble at the start, and she ran a terrible race. And like, you can, you know, even if she hadn't stumbled, I wouldn't have expected her to run well, but she did stumble. So to me, the race is a complete toss. So I would be looking for improvement from her last sprint in California. And she's been working well since then. She worked well going into her last race at Keeneland. But for me, like, it's that's good because she was already working well, and then she had the bad race, and she's just been maintaining her fitness since then. She has enough speed to be close, but won't get caught up in the speed brigade. Like, I can see five horses going out there across the track, and Secret Keeper being like three lengths behind, still pretty close, but getting first jump. Because I think speed is, you know, looking at the stats for the last meet, which wasn't that long, speed has been doing well at almost every distance. So, you know, I don't want to be part of the speed brigade, but I also don't want to be too far back. And that's why I'm landing on Secret Keeper.
Well, I picked Secret Keeper in her last race, and she did stumble really badly in that race. So I don't know if you can attribute it to the ship or anything. She
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a toss race. I'm just saying. I'm just saying that, you know.
But
she's at his home base now.
Yeah, I disagree that her race prior to that she reacted. She ran better in that race than she did in the race before. She just didn't get the distance, and they went really fast early in that Torrey Pines. And Harvest Moon, who she only got beat a length by, is a really nice horse. So that wasn't a regression from her previous race. That was a forward move, I think. That was a really impressive race that she ran, that second place in the Torrey Pines. So I didn't see that as a regression or a reaction to her prior race. I thought that was a move forward. But I think those were two big races in a row. And whenever they stumble badly out of the gate, I get really nervous. When they go to their knees like that, that can be a sign of something bad a lot of times. So I'm a little nervous about this horse coming off those big efforts and then shipping and stumbling. I'm always worried there's something wrong. And her workouts since then aren't nearly what they were prior to that race. So even though this is a horse that I marked to play back, because I liked her going into that race and she had an excuse, I'm not going to say she can't win. I'm not going to toss her, and she'll be a halfway decent price. Although 6-1 seems kind of low. I'm a little leery about that horse, given that stumble and the big effort, especially the two turn effort and, the slow workout since her last. Those really make me kind of nervous. She was working really fast before her last race, and she's been working really slow since. So I'm a little nervous about her. Because I wanted to play her. I without just seeing the entries, Fair Maiden and Sacred Keeper were two horses I had marked as playback. So I was really interested in them. But I look at it, and I'm still positive on Fair Maiden, but I'm a little less enthusiastic on Sacred Keeper. So that's just my take on her. There's a lot of other ones we could talk about. I'll let Gino weigh in if he's got some other horses he likes. There's one more I like. I will say Finite, the 5 horse, is the one to beat. There's really no knocks on her. She can sit off the pace. She showed, she can beat good horses at this, and 7 furlongs should be fine for her. They ship out for a Grade 1. You don't get too many chances at 7 furlongs for a Grade 1. So she's definitely the one to beat. I have one other long shot I like, but I'll turn it over to Scott and Gino if they've got anything else they want to say.
I thought Motivated Seller, I'm a little concerned with the distance for her, but visually she's been pretty impressive, and she shouldn't have any problem breeding wise going a little bit longer. She got caught just a little bit wide, and she was in the second flight. She's about 3 lengths off in her most recent start. I'm talking about Motivated Seller, and she was just wide, and that ended up catching up with her a little bit late. She had to move from in between at the top of the lane. She battled, and she just got nailed late. The wide trip hurt. I like her. I think she's probably another one to use. Like I said, for me, like Fair Maiden, you guys both mentioned quite a bit. No knocks on her. Miko for me, Secret Keeper will also be in the mix for me. Maybe if you're going a little crazy, if there's anyone that could possibly, I think maybe even be the fastest in here, maybe it's Biddy Duke. And if this horse is sort of a long shot and everybody else says, oh, okay, let's just sort of sit right behind Biddy Duke, maybe Biddy Duke could get out front and could hit the board and spice things up a little bit at a big price. But this is a really fun race with a lot of different ways to go. I really wouldn't talk you off like almost anyone in this field, honestly. If you made a case for 10, I probably couldn't make a strong case for the rail horse, but anybody else in here, I really wouldn't talk you off of them that much.
All right. Well, I do have one other horse. It'll be interesting to see if Chris lands on the same one. Golden Principle is on the outside, and she was always pretty fast. She was fast as a 2-year-old. She showed a new dimension being able to rate off the lead in her last. It was a mile race. They removed the blinkers, and she didn't have to have the lead. So she should be fine. I like the cutback from the mile. And in that race, she was hand-ridden and extended on the gallop out. So I think there's a chance that she could run a bang up race, and I think she's 12-1 morning line. So that's the other horse I'm interested in.
Yeah, that's the same with me. I like the fact they took the blinkers off, and she'd been kind of a runoff, need the lead type. And she actually showed that she could relax with the blinkers off going long. And now she cuts back and she draws the outside. And, I agree Biddy Duke will be out there winging it, but Baffert's going to have at least one of his horses go.
They're not all that's a problem. Sit. No,
so
someone's going
to be a hot. Yeah, there's going to be a hot pace, and it's hard to tell who he's going to send in here. But one or two of his horses, he likes to let his speed horses roll anyway, and he's got 4 of them in the race, so he's certainly not going to rate all 4.
No.
So it will be, and it is a 7-furlong race, so they'll be going fast early, and you'll have to have something in the tank in the stretch to win this. So. I would, if I could toss a horse, it would be Biddy Duke and like the one horse, because I just don't see anybody, getting an easy lead in this race for sure. But Golden Principle is kind of interesting. It might be the Baffert that gets completely overlooked. Um, and it has talent, and if it has finally learned how to rate with those blinkers off, and it sits a nice trip from the outside, can drop in off the front runners, it could be one of the horses finishing late.
All right. Well, I think we've covered that race pretty thoroughly. So let's move on to the ninth. It's the American Oaks, a grade one, 1.25 miles on the turf, purse of $300,000 for three-year-old fillies. Gino, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I really liked Duopoly in here. You know, it's kind of a sort of a square pick in that it really just looks like she's the lone speed in here. And I think one of the reasons why I like her even more is because the two-back race when she didn't get the lead, I actually thought she ran pretty well. She broke well, but they were going quick early on. And so she decided to sit inside and tuck in, and she never got room. She never really got a chance to run. By the time she got a little bit of an opening, she was already flat and her best run had dulled that day. And she was behind a horse named Princess Grace, who came back to win a grade two next out of that. I just don't know who else is going to go in here. Chad Brown had already said for sure that he's going to be well set up in this race because he's going to have one horse going and one horse taken back. So I think that even gives him a little more opportunity to say, hey, let's get aggressive with Duopoly. I think they have a few lengths on this field in here. You get Pratt, who is one of the absolute best out here on the West Coast. So this is going to be one situation where on one of my tickets, I will definitely be singling Duopoly in this spot as a horse who, you know, probably be around 3-1, 7-2, I think. I wouldn't be shocked in a race where you'll probably have a few horses at that price. I don't know who is really, you know, maybe Going to Vegas has a little speed. Luck Money is tactical. Those horses are just, they don't seem like they're really even close enough to quick. Sharing is going to be there, but I just have some concerns on if Sharing wants to go this far. She got a pretty good trip tracking behind, and I don't know. She's very nice at a mile and a 16th. I'd probably feel inclined on maybe singling or keying stuff around her, but I just don't know at 1.25 miles for her. Give me a horse who I think is going to be in front of her and in front of the rest of the field.
Okay, Duopoly, the speed half of the Chad Brown entry. Chris, where did you land?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Duopoly will be the engine and capital structure. The three horse will be the caboose for Chad Brown. He likes that. He usually likes, if he has multiple horses, he's not afraid to send one and mm-hmm. rate the other. And Rosario's really good on closers, and Pratt's good on a front runner. Sharing is really good horse, and it's the kind of horse that makes her own trip. And she's going to be, you know, stalking Duopoly throughout. And if this were, like Gino said, if this was a mile race, I think Sharing would be the one to beat. And 1.25 miles, it's a big question mark. I mean, they've been keeping her at 1 mile all year long. I think the only reason that they're shipping, you know, back out for this race is because it's a grade one. And they're trying to, you know, if it wasn't a grade one race, they probably wouldn't be in it. Her breeding doesn't scream the distance. Spikestown can get distance horses, but not typically. I mean, he does get some good ones. The shared account was a little better going shorter, but she did win the Breeders' Cup Turf, Filly and Mare Turf. That was the only time she won it at a long distance, but she did win at a big price. I remember that well because I had her that day at the Breeders' Cup. To me, that makes this a wide open race because she is not a lock at this distance. So I was struggling on who to go with in here, though. Duopoly is a threat. The other Chad Brown, you know, clearly looks like that she'll like longer. I probably end up with the most likely winner in here being the 5-horse Luck Money, who's proven at the distance, has been facing older horses and winning. So there's a lot to like there, but 7-2, I'm not too excited. So, you know, there's some other long shots that are kind of a little bit more speculative that I could play as well. But, you know, I am kind of ambivalent on this race. I'm having a tough time with it. But if I had to pick a winner, it would be the 5 Luck Money. I don't necessarily think that's a good bet, but that's kind of where I am as the most likely winner. And I got a few long shots I could talk about, but I'll let Scott weigh in first.
Well, I struggled with this race as well. The numbers are very similar, and I think maybe the deeper you can go, the better in this race. I did land on Luck Money. She's the only proven marathon horse here. She's gotten better. She's gotten exceptionally better in the last few races where they've stretched her out. She might be a little priced since Santana is not really known as a turf jockey, even though he's entirely capable. I mean, he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf with Fire at Will at over 30-1. So I think that she still might be an okay price, and that's why I wouldn't play the pick five without her. But the numbers are pretty good on Red Lark, and that trainer, Patty Gallagher, can get a horse to go a long distance. And I thought Capital Structure I would use. I mean, I wouldn't not want that Chad in there. In fact, she's 2-for-3, and the one race that she lost, she was running on a course that Racing Flow rated a CFR1, meaning on a scale of 1 to 100. If it's a 1, then that's the easiest for a speed horse to win. And if it's 100, it's easiest for a closer to win. So she was running against a course that was completely against her style. So I would use those three, and I'm sort of on the fence with sharing. Maybe yes, maybe no. Haven't quite decided on that one.
Yeah, I thought Luck Money is probably like the measuring stick for this race. I think if nobody jumps up, Luck Money will probably win this race. She's just super consistent, super honest, and she just never runs a bad race and really has things figured out. I agree with Capital Structure being one. I just prefer the two of them more than sharing if you're looking at some of the shorter priced horses in here to use. And for me, if I'm looking for maybe a bust out long shot, I thought that the Neige Blanche was a little bit interesting here. I actually played her a little in the Belmont Oaks off of her race in the Delmar Oaks, which she's had some traffic, but she was able to make up ground and move into contention and kind of flattened out late for a close up fourth. And then last out, she broke well. She wanted to be closer, but then she sort of got caught in between and she got shuffled back in a really small field, and she didn't run that poorly. It was kind of a weird trip. She moved up into second after getting shuffled back. I wouldn't be shocked if in a race that on paper doesn't look to have that much speed, if they try to get her not on the lead, but just maybe sitting third or fourth, because there's not a ton of pace in here.
Yeah, the long shots, I would go with you with on the 10, Neige Blanche. She is a distance horse. You know, she's a genuine 1.25-mile horse. And she hasn't had the best of trips in her two U.S. starts, but they haven't been that bad. You know, and this field isn't that strong. So at 12-1, I think that there's value there. And she gets Rispoli, so she'll probably get a good ride. And the 10 hole isn't the bad. They start this race on the hill, so it's not that bad. And that is one thing to note. They do start this race on the hill. And I think they do. I think they still do on these route races. And that makes it a little shorter than 1.25 miles. So that helps some of the horses that are maybe a little distance challenge, because that downhill run for the first quarter mile or so isn't quite as taxing as, you know, the normal quarter mile would be. So keep that in mind as well.
All right. Well, I think we are done with that race. So let's try the 10th race. It's the Malibu Stakes, Grade One, 7 furlongs, purse of $300,000 for 3-year-olds. Chris, will you or won't you?
Will I or won't I what?
Will you or won't you single Nashville? That's the question.
Well, you know, he is the most interesting horse just from a fan perspective, because, you know, I've always been a sucker for these, you know, freaky fast speed horses. I mean, horses like Chinook Pass and Landaluce and Ruffy, and the horses that just, they're so fast, nobody can keep up with them. And, you know, I don't know if he's in that category, but he looks like he might be. And so if he is, you know, the fact he's never been challenged early is not relevant, because he's the kind of horse that no one can keep up with. So he's going to slow down late, but his game is he's so far ahead when they, you know, hit the mid stretch that even though he's tiring late, no one's going to catch him. So if he can do that, if he really is a freak, if he's another Chinook Pass or, you know, really fast runner, then he's the one to beat. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does win, but I'm not absolutely sure that's the case. And Charlatan is a pretty quick horse, and it's a Baffert trained horse, and they, you know, could maybe catch him, you know, get somewhere close enough to make him sweat, and then we'll see how good he is. But you know, he might run away from him. I am kind of against Charlatan because, you know, this is sort of not the target for that horse. Baffert's not really good in the Malibu, is not his race. According to an article I read in DRF, he's only won three out of, with 46 starters, he's only won three times. You know, that's a win percentage for Baffert in a grade one dirt race at Santa Anita. That's incredibly bad.
Yeah, keep in mind that many of those entries were multiple entries, just like he has four in the La Brea today. So you got to give that a little
But he's not three for 46 in the Santa Anita Derby, and he enters two or three in those, you know. He's 28% overall, and he enters multiple horses all the time. So, you know, this is clearly not the kind of race that he targets. And this isn't the target for Charlatan. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the Pegasus, or, you know, he's going to be running in two turn races next. This is just a prep. He could be cranked up, or he probably is cranked up, but I don't know if he can keep up with Nashville. So I'm definitely going to toss Charlatan so that I get some value there. But the horse I really like in here is Independence Hall. And, you know, I tabbed him a long time ago. I wanted to play him. I mean, he ran some really big races, a two-year-old, the kind of races that knock two-year-olds out, and they usually need some time off before they can come back. But they can often come back and run really big in the fall and winter as a three-year-old. I was against him in his three-year-old races, and he did tail off, and they did give him the time off, and he came back with a perfect prep in a new barn, which I think is an improved barn with McCarthy as one of the up-and-coming young trainers. Now, he has that race under his belt, second off a layoff. He should get a perfect stocking trip behind Charlatan in Nashville. If Nashville's not a freak, I think he's the one who can finish off the race and win. And he's 4-1 on the morning line. I think he'll float up above that. I think Charlatan and Nashville are going to take all the money. And to me, I'll probably single Independence Hall if I play the pick five, and just hope that I can beat Nashville. So I'm all about the six horse Independence Hall in here.
Okay, bold play. Anecdotally, I've seen Independence Hall mentioned by a number of people on Twitter. Gino, where did you land?
One ticket. I will absolutely be doing the same thing Chris does with Independence Hall. And in a small field like this, you know, you start eliminating horses and you start thinking about how the race is going to unfold. And I think I've heard Baffert mention Charlatan and Nashville a few times in a matchup. And just knowing him, he takes this kind of thing super personal, and he gets, you know, we all got ego with stuff like this. I think in these big races, when there's a horse like this coming in touted, I think Charlatan's going to at least be trying to go right with Nashville or do his absolute best to just make it difficult on him. Cause then at the very least, you know, Baffert may think Thousand Words could sit the trip right off of him, and it could set up for a horse like Thousand Words. I just think Independence Hall is better. And I start going through the rest of the field. I don't like Collusion Illusion, especially down from the rail. I just don't think he's quite that good. Maybe Thousand Words could be a horse who falls into that sort of trip that I'm looking for. And with Express Train, I wouldn't even really talk you off throwing him onto a deeper ticket if you're taking this same approach and looking at the race like I do, as you know, something like his September 26th race that was going a mile. If he's able to sit a trip a couple lengths behind, and he'll be a little, you know, going 7 furlongs, he'll be a little tighter cutting back. I'm all about Independence Hall. He's on all of my tickets. I probably will have a ticket or two with Charlatan and probably not Nashville, But the way that I have the races prior to this, I might be able to play one ticket where I use just sort of the logical horses in here because I'm singling duopoly, or maybe I'm going to single with a little bit of a price in one of the other races. So I'm not completely against Nashville as a horse or anything. I just don't know if 7 furlongs with Charlatan right next to him, breathing down his neck, is going to be better with a really good horse like Independence Hall. So in anything around like 7-2 at Independence Hall, that feels like a fair price in this race.
Okay, a lot of love for Independence Hall. Well, I think there's I didn't want to just say Nashville, but I would use Nashville. And I can actually play a $36 pick five, and I can fatten it up later if I want, and use both Nashville and my long shot pick in this race. There's a chance that Nashville and Charlatan really go at it, and they've both been on the lead every step of the way. So they could battle and both collapse. And you guys are playing it that way with Independence Hall. But I'm actually a little bit more interested in Express Train. In his first race this year, he stumbled and was roughed up, and he was far back. He made a huge run to win, and it was a big new top for him. So it was not a surprise that he regressed, stretching to two turns, running into Buzzsaw Extra Hope. Then he ran on the turf. He's been working gangbusters since that turf race. And if he can improve on that that first race of this year, that sprint, I think he could spring the upset. And that could make I can see everybody being, oh my God, the longest shot on the board, 20-1 Express Train. So I want some of that action. I did look closely at Independence Hall. I watched that replay again, and I will agree with Chris that if he can replicate that 2-year-old race or improve on it, he wins this race. And obviously you too, Gino, I know Chris is looking at the same numbers as I am. It was a gigantic race. He looked good in that last race, but he still hasn't come close to that 2-year-old giant race that he ran. And I thought he kind of had to work in the last race. It looked like it was a little bit of a taxing effort. So I'm kind of playing against him, and my play will be with Express Train and Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, he had another one of those slow 59 flat workouts since that last race Independence Hall did. So he might not be ready.
Hey, you know, well, I have a complicated relationship with workouts, and that is the best workout that he's ever had. I agree that it was a great workout, and that's why I think he might be as low as 3-1. So, I like those kind of workouts, the best workout ever on more of a price horse. I don't know. You know, it's complicated, but I agree with you. It was a really nice workout. A bullet, 1 out of 83. Nice.
Yeah. I'll be absolutely shocked if he's 7-2 with Nashville and Charlatan in this race. He's not going to be 7-2. And there might be a few people on Twitter who are going to bet him. Yeah, I agree. Like me, but the vast majority of people
are going
to be on either Nashville or Charlatan, and they're going to both be, you know, probably lower than the morning line. And that just doesn't leave any room in the mutual pool for anybody else. So you're, especially in horizontal plays, you're going to be getting a lot better than 7-2 on it.
Oh yeah.
Well, okay. That's why they run the race. It's going to be a great day of watching and commentating.
Yeah. This race in particular will be exciting because, you know, you hope that Charlatan guns from the gate and can keep up with Nashville, because then the race gets really interesting. You know, maybe they're both better than the rest, but then all of a sudden it brings everybody else into the race, including Express Train, going that 7-furlong distance. You know, the thing I'm just not sure about is if Charlatan, even if they try, can keep up with Nashville. I mean,
That's a good point. And the thing about Charlatan too, I think he's been one of those horses who's fast in his like second and third strides. And if he's just a step slow in a spot like this, he might be in some trouble. You know, if Mashville breaks and he's a tad slow, I don't know anybody else. Nobody else can press. It's got to be Charlton. Like, that's the key to the race. If Nashville opens up too early, it's probably over.
Yeah, and you have to figure Baffert doesn't think he's going to win by setting off and running Nashville down. He feels like he's got a horse that can go two turns and shown that. And if he can, you know, get on his throat latch when they turn for home, then he can put him away. So if he really wants to win, you got to think they're going to be all out to you know, stay up with him. But if he's thinking about this more as a prep, which he might be, maybe he's happy with him if he can teach his horse to rate a little bit and finish up well and run second in Nashville and be set for, you know, his next start. He may not be too unhappy with that. So I don't know exactly what the intentions are heading into the race, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, it's interesting. I would like to ask Craig Milkowski this question. Charlatan shows a 1:43.5 pace figure on time form, and Nashville ran a quarter in his pace figure was 1:49, I believe. Yeah, 1:49, even though it's not even red coated. His half was 1:42. So I don't know how they compare like the pace figure, a two-turn pace figure.
No, you can't compare it that way because it's relative to what they typically run at that distance. So like a 150, you might get a 200 going a mile and a half on the turf. And if you ran that same fraction going 6 furlongs, you'd end up with an 85. You know, it's relative to what they run at the distance. So what's for Timeform US, it's better to look at the adjusted fractions to see how fast they actually went. And so if you look at that, you can see that those are comparable. So, you know, you can see that Charlatan's never gone nearly as fast as Nashville, you know, from a you know, actual raw speeds, but he was clear and he was going longer. That doesn't mean he can't run faster. You just don't. If you look at their fastest quarter and half in races they've actually run, Nashville's definitely run faster, but he's been sprinting and Charlatan's been going, you know, two turns. So the question is, how fast can Charlatan go if they really send him? Hopefully we'll find out on Saturday and see if he can keep up with Nashville early.
It's going to be a fun race. Let's move on to the 11th. It's the Lady of Shamrock Stakes, a mile on turf, purse of $75,000 for three-year-old fillies. Gino B, what do you got?
I have a lot of respect for some of the horses that'll probably be, you know, the logicals, like Warren Showtime, super honest cowbred, always shows up. Counterparty Risk would not shock me at all. Nasty wouldn't. But there are two horses in particular that I think will be sort of longer priced and we might be able to get double digits on that I will no doubt be using in my pick fives. They're the 1 and the 5, Applecross and Moonhall Millie. When I'm looking at Applecross, she's a filly that I love playing horses like this who her career has always been interrupted. Race interrupted by a layoff, another race interrupted by another layoff. For the first time, she's really getting to put a couple starts together. She raced back in November. It was her first start in a few months, and she ran really, really well that day. She settled on the inside. She was sixth, and she was actually about 10 lengths off at one point. And she started to move inside really well, and she got beat to the spot by Beguiled. It was just a really good ride by Pratt on Beguiled. That was the difference between winning and finishing second. She had to just kind of sit, wait, move around. She was a little unlucky. Now she's going to go second off the four-month break. And I think she's going to be able to save all the ground. Johnny V jumps aboard. She's a great price. I'll be using her in the pick five for sure. Moonhall Millie is the other one. Now you look at her and she's coming off of a race where she just got outrun going 5.5. She comes back to a mile where she won two starts back. And when you look at some of her numbers and figures just on speed figures, she looks a little low. But what I like is when you look at who she's been facing, she's actually been competing against some pretty nice animals that we saw earlier in graded stakes races, California Kook, going to Vegas, even Biddy Duke, who we talked about. Those horses are all legitimate graded stakes horses who she's been facing. So I don't really have any worry about her contending with a group like this. This is really where she belongs. So to me, the 1 and the 5 are really interesting price horses that I'll be using.
All right. A pair of 12 to ones. Bold. We like it. Chris, where did you land?
Yeah, of the two that Gino mentioned, I probably would prefer the 1 drawing the rail and getting Johnny Velasquez on board. And like I think Gino mentioned, kind of Rosario kind of got outridden by Pratt in that last
yep.
race. And I mean, I think with different trips, definitely could have won that race. I was trying to fish for the long shots. I'm always a little nervous in these California turf races to go with any California horses, although, you know, Applecross. So that's why I'm a little nervous, you know, even in the other turf race we talked about, there's some, you know, long shots that kind of on paper look like they might fit, but it seems like every time the East Coast horses come, they just run over even the best West Coast turf horses. So I'm a little leery of playing like an Applecross. I definitely would use her, but again, I was sort of ambivalent. I landed on a horse that's not a big price. Maybe I'm hoping it'll float up a bit, but it probably won't. That's a 2-horse Miss Extra. You know, to me, she's got a lot of class. I mean, she won a grade 2 in France. Typically, a grade 2 winner in France is going to win a $75,000 stakes race at Santa Anita. She did have 1 race in California, but that was right off the plane. And, you know, she didn't really lift a hoof. And I'm just going to toss it. She didn't have Lasix that day. Now she's been in the Mandela barn for a while, has some sharp workouts, gets Lasix, gets Rispoli, gets an inside post. I mean, this horse, I think, might crush in here. So, again, if I play the pick 5, I will probably single her. Maybe throw in the Chad Brown horse just because he dominated so incredibly with his horses a few weeks ago at Del Mar. That 8-horse counterparty risk with Rosario up might be one I'd have to use as a backup. But to me, you know, Group 2 winner at a mile in France this summer, and now you've got her in a $75,000 listed stakes with the best turf rider, Hall of Fame trainer, and a good post. You know, how do you not gravitate towards that? So I'm probably all about the 2 Miss Extra.
Well, I certainly, when I first ran through the race, I certainly had Miss Extra as one of the 4 or 5 horses that I think were fast enough to win. But I did watch 1 replay and it convinced me, and that is Counterparty Risk. I don't know. I didn't watch her very first race. I always forgive the first race either way, but I watched the second one and she was favored. It was a maiden race, but boy, I mean, she was very far back and she made this big wide move and she pretty much inhaled them. And like, it looked like it was going to take a while for her to get up, but then all of a sudden she was over a length ahead. She galloped out really well. And when they zoomed in on the horse, I love the way she looked. I love the coat. And this is a bold move for Chad Brown to send this horse out here in only its 3rd start. So I looked up, like, what did Chad Brown horses do 3rd start? And they win at 30%. That's general, right? Just at 30%.
Well, he wins everything at 30%, but yeah.
His lifetime total is 26%. So that's significant. Okay. But then 3rd out in a stakes race, 32% with a 268 ROI. So I liked the way the horse looked. And, you know, these California horses, I kind of agree with Chris. They aren't that great. I mean, you know, California Kook, Red Lark went, you know, to Keeneland and gave a pretty good account of herself. Like, she finished 2nd. Fourth by less than 2 lengths. I just think, you know, this is an opportunity. Chad Brown's got an opportunity. So I'm inclined to single Counterparty Risk here and like get my value that way by just using 1 horse. While I do think that the 2, if I were going to use a 2nd one, I'd probably add that 2, but I might just not do that just so I can extract some value out of this race?
Yeah, I'd say that definitely that's the main threat is. And if you look at Chad Brown in California, I mean, he won four or five races a couple of weeks ago at Del Mar. So, yeah, he's definitely one you have to respect. So that would be the other one I might use. But if you look at Miss Extra, I mean, she's won a grade two race in France. So that's beating good horses. She's 3 for 3 going a mile on the turf. The only time she's lost were going shorter or being on or longer, you know, like her. She lost her last two, but they were going longer. You know, to me, this horse just is a standout. Now, Counterparty Risk, it's kind of like Idol and Mucho Gusto. You know, you don't know how good Counterparty Risk is, and you know she's well meant and for all the reasons you said. But she's probably got to improve to beat Miss Extra. And so, you know, to me, that's sort of a backup for me. Miss Extra is the one to beat, and then Counterparty is your one you got to respect. Kind of like Mucho Gusto is the one to beat, and Idol might be the one you have to respect. That's kind of how I would view those two, real similar and from a betting standpoint. And they'll probably both be about the same odds in the race. So it'll be interesting to see how they bet it.
If I do single Counterparty Risk and Miss Extra wins, I'm not going to be a happy camper. But I actually probably could include Miss Extra and still have an under $100 pick five play. Any other thoughts on this one, Gina?
Yeah, I mean, I have no knocks on Miss Extra too. I think if she's she fits in here from a class perspective. The horse she ran into last time too, Fancy Blue, is really, really nice before she came over to the United States. And I think just a complete toss. She ran too bad to believe it. So, you know, you just completely excuse her last effort there. And this was a race. I probably will have two spots throughout the sequence where I think about singling. Don't think this is one of them. This to me is one where I would definitely want to throw a couple of the other prices in, and I've, you know, Miss Extra, no knocks on her. And I don't love any of the California horses in the graded stakes races. I just don't know, you know, with the Chad Brown horse has upside, and Miss Extra, we still have to see it in the U.S. This isn't necessarily, you know, using the U.S., the California horses against really, really tough proven horses. So I'm okay with throwing some of them in this race, but I generally agree with you when the Chad Brown horses chip out here in like the graded stakes races, they're going to usually tower over from a class perspective and gobble up these SoCal West Coast horses on the grass.
Well, hopefully that maiden, the single maiden win will keep the price of Counterparty Risk high. Any other plays on the undercard, guys?
How about you, Gino? You're the one that never sleeps.
I looked throughout. In the fourth race, there's another stakes race. It's the Mathis Brothers Mile. It's a grade two race. And there's a horse from the inside, Whisper Knot, who's kind of interesting. I really respect Smooth Like Straight, who's going to take a lot of money in there. But Whisper Knot came over to Del Mar on November the 29th, was close up, you know, 6th, 7th, but not too far out of it early on. Two Path was tucked inside, and sort of the trip that we were talking about with the horse in the last race, the long shot Apple Cross. She just got beat to a spot, did Whisper Knot, and he ended up finishing 2nd that day. Shadow Sphinx got a much better trip, and I think Whisper Knot might have been best. There's not a lot of difference sometimes, you know, stepping up from a race like that into a graded stakes race, and that race was actually a race against older. This is a race for strictly 3-year-olds, so not, you know, it looks like you're going from an allowance optional claiming race into a graded stakes race, but when you've been facing older and now you're back in with three, it's almost like a lateral move. So throw Whisper Knot into your early pick fives if you're playing those.
Yeah, I'll pile on that one. I like that horse a lot. Not only that, Baltus is a really good trainer. Rosario is back on. He's the one who got beat at to the spot. He was the same rider that got beat to the spot in Apple.
Exactly.
Cross,
you're right. Yeah.
But, you know, some of these riders, they're not perfect, you know. And
absolutely.
And, but he's good and draws the rail, you know, so a lot to like in a race where Smooth Like Straight will get pounded. I mean, 8-5 morning line, probably more like 3-5 or 4-5 at post time. And Field Pass will take a lot of money. And Field Pass is a good horse too, but you know, Whisper Knot, you could get at 5-1 or higher. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you of the undercard, you know, Whisper Knot is definitely playable.
All right. And I actually have a spot play. I actually had time to look. Now I can't guarantee this one's going to win, but I think he can crack the super at 15-1 or higher. And that is in the first race. Take a look at the 7, Go Big Blue Nation. He's third off a layoff, which trainer McCarthy specializes in. He's got a nice ROI, positive ROI doing that. And in his last, he steadied and finished less than 3 lengths back at 83-1. It was his best race, and he should move forward from that in his third off a layoff. And it was about as good as his very young, early 3-year-old best race. So he's got some upside, and he is slower than most of these or many of these, but that should help his price. And that's where you get value, is playing a horse to improve that actually does. So he's got some chance to win the thing, but you know, second, third, fourth in those positions in the super could be beneficial.
Yeah, I like that horse some too. The 7 horse Go Big Blue Nation. If we're on that race, I also like the 1 horse Cookie Gal, who I think had a totally excusable trip last time and has run some really good races in the past and draws the rail with Flavian Pratt. So Pratt might knock the price down. I thought 6-1 seemed low for the morning line, but with Pratt on board, maybe that's why that they have that horse at 6-1. And the horse hasn't really done much running in its last few, so I expected it to be a higher price than the morning line. But that's another one I'd take a look at, the 1 Cookie Gal in that race.
Cookie Gal.
Yeah, Cookie Gal. Cookie. might be a kooky pick, but I mean, she hasn't. She's run 6th and 10th in her last 4 starts. She hasn't won this year. That's why I can't believe she's 6-1 in the morning line. That's why it shocked me. So it might just be a bad morning line. So if she does go off at like 10 or 15-1, then she's a really good play. But she's kind of interesting to me in that race.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank our guest, Gino Bucola. Gino, thanks for doing the show with us.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun. Scott, I'll have to bring you on sometime, and I'll bring Chris on. We can get the whole crew on to handicap a card one day over on my show. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right. Sounds awesome. That will conclude show number 100, of the Sport of Kings pod. Good luck in the Santa Anita Pick 5, and please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
I'll see you on Sport of Kings. Cheers.
Giddy up.